science, learning, business, community. You. Welcome to Think Works, the podcast for people who like to think. Because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Think Works, the place where we like to do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this week, at long last, I'm starting my series on Eastern philosophy and 101. If you remember, many episodes ago, I did a multi-part series within a series of Think Works looking at key Western philosophical introspections and expositions. And it struck me that the East wasn't represented in that series at all. And I knew that there must be, running concurrently and even before Greek philosophy, Far East, like China, Chinese philosophy, and so on, and then the Indian continent as well. So for the last couple of months, I've been really trying to get a grounding on Eastern philosophy. And it's very, very interesting. It kind of diverts in many ways away from Western philosophical inquiry, but it has the same themes at the centre of each one of those most famous expositions. So what I'm going to do is, for this episode, it's really an introduction, and I'm going to really talk about the key themes in Eastern and Indian philosophy. I'm also going to draw out distinctions about how it differs with the West. And then we'll get into the key philosophical inquiries in the next episode, I think. So without further ado, let's begin. So at the heart of Eastern philosophy, there are a set of key inquiries and beliefs, as I've said, and these start with the nature of reality and the self. Now, in Hinduism, this tradition explores the duality and unity of Brahman, the ultimate reality that permeates all existence, and Atman, the self or soul. Now, the philosophical school of Advaita Vedanta, for example, teaches that realizing the non-difference between Atman and Brahman leads to liberation, or the term moksha. I hope I'm pronouncing all these words correctly. As I say, I'm not Chinese or Indian, so if I'm making a mess of these, someone please tell me and I'll correct them in a future episode. But right now, that's what I'm going with. In Buddhism, central to Buddhist thought is the concept of anatta, or non-self, and that challenges the notion of a permanent, unchanging self. This doctrine is critical in understanding sunyata, or emptiness, and underscores the impermanent and interdependent nature of all phenomena. Now, you've got Taoism, or Taoism, at the heart of that is the Tao, often described as the way, and Tao is spelled D-A-O, and it represents the fundamental nature of everything in the universe. Taoism emphasizes understanding the natural world and the individual's place within it, and it advocates for a life of harmony with this way. And then you've got Confucianism. While Confucianism prioritizes social and familial roles over metaphysical inquiries, it still presents a vision of the self as intrinsically linked to societal structures. It emphasizes, therefore, the development of the relational self that becomes integral into social harmony. Now, within all those beliefs, you've got ethics and morality that are often espoused within Eastern and Indian philosophy. So in Hinduism, ethics revolve around the concepts of dharma, which is duty and righteousness, and karma, action and its consequences. And we all use the word really without really understanding where it's come from. We know that karma probably means fate, and karma is a, you know the word. But in Hinduism, it's really a principle that guides individuals to live in a morally upright manner, and it reflects their societal and cosmic duties. Now, in Buddhism, in terms of ethics and morality, the Noble Eightfold Path, which forms Buddhism's ethical core, that has guiding adherence with principles such as right speech, right action, and livelihood to cultivate morality and insight. And that ultimately leads towards enlightenment and alleviation of suffering. Now, Taoism and Taoism, in terms of ethics and morality, they promote virtue through wu wei, or effortless action, and that encourages actions that align naturally with the flow of the universe. This philosophy in particular stresses simplicity, humility, and compassion as keys to ethical harmony, whereas the Confucius strand of philosophy emphasizes virtues such as ren, which is benevolence, or li, which is propriety, and zao, which is filial piety. Now, these virtues are essential in fostering a well-ordered and harmonious society where individuals therefore fulfill their roles and responsibilities with integrity. Another key theme in Eastern and Indian philosophy is the whole idea of harmony and balance. Now, Taoism in particular talks about how harmony is achieved by aligning oneself with the Tao, which results in a balanced life where one lives in accordance with natural rhythms. The yin-yang symbol, you've all seen it with the white and the black in a circle. They're shaped like droplets, but they form a circle. That symbol embodies this balance, and it represents opposites that are interconnected and interdependent in the natural world. The Confucius stream of philosophical inquiry, however, advocates for social harmony through righteous conduct, emphasizing the importance of fostering healthy relationships and community well-being. The community is more important than the individual. Education, self-cultivation, and adherence to social roles are seen as pathways to achieving this harmony. Another key theme in Eastern and Indian philosophy is the whole idea of the path to enlightenment, and really Hinduism and Buddhism come into their own in this field. So in Hinduism, the ultimate goal of moksha, liberation, is achieved through realizing the self-unity with Brahman. Practices such as yoga, meditation, and adherence to Dharma play pivotal roles in this journey. In Buddhism, enlightenment or nirvana, that marks liberation from the cycle of samsara, which is birth, death, and rebirth. And this is accomplished through the Eightfold Path, which guides individuals away from ignorance and attachment. So by immersing in these core inquiries, Eastern philosophies provide profound insights into life's meaning, ethical living, and the pursuit of spiritual fulfillment. This exploration offers a holistic view where the microcosm of personal existence reflects actually the macrocosm of universal truths. Now, this approach on Eastern and Indian philosophies differs from the Western, the Greek-centered philosophical inquiries in several key ways. I'll just give you a quick reminder of what we discussed in previous episodes about this. So, in the Western philosophy, the foundations, the core foundations, are nature of reality and the self, is that Greek philosophy is a quest to understand reality, and it began with figures like Plato and Aristotle, and the allegory of the cave illustrates the journey from ignorance to knowledge, and that reveals the soul's capacity to access these ideal forms. In modern philosophy, Western philosophy, marked by the likes of René Descartes, shifted focus towards subjectivity and individualism becomes more prominent. So the famous cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am, underscored the separation of mind and body, laying the groundwork really for modern notions of consciousness and identity. In terms of ethics and morality, you have people like Bentham and Mill, who did the utilitarianism approach, which emphasizes the greatest happiness principle, where actions are right if they tend to promote happiness and wrong if they produce the opposite, reinforcing the idea of consequentialism. You've got deontology, which was put forward really by Immanuel Kant, and that introduced duty-based ethics, suggesting that actions are morally right if they adhere to rules or duties, regardless of the consequences. And in terms of virtue ethics, Aristotle focused on character and virtues, advocating for a balanced life guided by reason. He proposed the concept of the golden mean, suggesting that virtue lies between extremes of deficiency and excess, leading to a well-lived and moral life. In terms of rational thought and inquiry, the Enlightenment era solidified the importance of logic, reason, and scientific method in Western philosophical traditions. So philosophers like John Locke and David Hume, they expanded on empirical methods of inquiry, emphasizing experience and observations as the foundation of knowledge. Having independence of mind and a healthy skepticism, this was encouraged by thinkers such as Descartes and Spinoza, fostering intellectual rigor and questioning of established doctrines. And then you add integration with theological context, because Western philosophy often distinguishes itself from theology. Its roots are intertwined, however, with religious thought, particularly during the Middle Ages, where scholastic philosophers like Thomas Aquinas sought to reconcile faith with reason. By the Enlightenment, however, a more secular approach emerged, prioritizing personal autonomy and rational thinking over religious dogma. Now, these are the core elements of Western philosophy, and it provides really that framework from a Western point of view to analyze the nature of reality, develop ethical systems, and promote intellectual inquiries. And these shape much of contemporary Western philosophical thought, highlighting the value of reason and the pursuit of knowledge in enhancing human experience. And always at the core is the idea of the self. Now that's the basics. How it differs from Eastern Indian philosophy is quite key, really. In the approach to philosophy and theology in particular, the Western philosophy had a clear distinction between philosophy and theology, especially as the modern period progressed. While early Western philosophy, particularly during the Middle Ages, was entwined with Christian theology, the Enlightenment marked a shift towards secularism. Philosophers like Descartes and Spinoza began prioritizing rational inquiry and empirical evidence over religious dogma, in fact taking almost an approach that scientists take when they address any experiment or explore any scientific principle or theory. This was supposed to foster a secular framework for exploring questions about existence, morality, and knowledge. Now, conversely, Eastern philosophies integrate theological insights with philosophical inquiry much more seamlessly. Traditions like Hinduism and Buddhism do not separate spiritual beliefs from philosophical exploration, weaving these together in a holistic approach that considers spiritual enlightenment and ethical living as integral to understanding reality. Which brings me on quite nicely onto the whole idea of the nature of reality and metaphysics. In Western philosophy, Western traditions often explore metaphysical questions through a lens of dualism, as seen in Cartesian thought, which emphasizes the separation of mind and body. Western metaphysics frequently involves rigorous logical analysis and tends to compartmentalize these different realms of inquiry. In contrast, Eastern thought often embraces non-dualism, as seen in Vedanta's notion that the self, the Atman, is one with the ultimate reality, Brahman. Metaphysical concepts like sunyata in Buddhism emphasize an interconnected and impermanent universe, distilling the belief that distinctions between subject and object are merely illusions. So Western philosophy tends to focus on the self and the pursuit of knowledge for the self, whereas Eastern philosophy really talks about us being part of a holistic whole. So it's not just about us, it's about the whole societal premise on which we are built and our cosmic responsibilities within that. Same with ethics and morality. Theories in the West have evolved to prioritize individual rights and duties. So Kant's deontological ethics emphasizes individual moral duties, while utilitarianism focuses on outcomes or consequences for societies, but mostly the individuals within societies. Eastern philosophy, however, Eastern ethics, by contrast, often derive from spiritual roles and natural laws, emphasizing duties within a community context. For example, the Confucianism underscores the significance of social roles and relationships, and Hinduism's Dharma underscores a duty-based life within a cosmic order. It also differs in terms of the way that we seek knowledge, the source of knowledge, I should say. So the Western philosophy generally prioritizes empirical evidence and logical reasoning, often following the scientific method to derive conclusions about reality. And this has fostered a tradition rooted in skepticism and analytical rigor. Conversely, Eastern traditions highly value experiential knowledge gained through meditation and direct insight. Practices like the Buddhist mindfulness and Hindu meditation represent gateways to understanding that transcend purely empirical observations. Now, one of the big differences and divergences between Western and Eastern Indian philosophy is in the whole idea of the role of religion and spiritual practice. So Western philosophy typically separates religion and philosophy more distinctly, advancing a naturalistic and human-centered approach. While theology has historically influenced Western philosophical inquiry, the modern era witnesses a more analytical and secular undertaking. Eastern philosophy, on the other hand, is its spirituality is deeply embedded within its philosophical inquiries. Practices are entwined, as demonstrated in Zen Buddhism's emphasis on experiential realization and Taoism's harmonious living within the Tao. That's a really massive difference, and we'll explore that when we talk about some of the key inquiries over the coming episodes. And then the other big one, which I've already alluded to, is this focus on the individual versus the collective. So Western philosophy often emphasizes the individual's autonomy, his rights or her rights and responsibilities. This individualistic perspective is evident in existentialism's focus on personal freedom and identity. Now, Eastern philosophy, by contrast, that has a collective focus and it's made much more prevalent. It stresses community harmony and the interconnectedness of all beings. And concepts like the Buddhist interdependent origination emphasize that existence is fundamentally relational. Now, again, we're going to cover that particular key difference a lot in the upcoming episodes when we talk about some of the key Eastern and Indian philosophical inquiries. In summary, while Western and Eastern philosophies offer distinct methodologies and priorities, both have profoundly contributed to our understanding of reality, to ethics, and indeed the quest for knowledge and enlightenment. By examining contrasts and synergies between the two different fields of philosophical inquiry, Western and Eastern and Indian, we can actually have a richer appreciation of the diverse approaches available in global philosophy. Now, the West tends to forget about this a lot. If you actually pick up, I would say 95% of all books published in the West about philosophy really only talk about the Greek and the Enlightenment period and then the modern drive towards secularism within philosophical inquiry. And it ignores, or it might just briefly mention, Eastern and Indian philosophical inquiry, which was actually around before the Greeks. And this is, it's one of the great unjust Western beliefs that we were first on everything, I think, and we weren't. So what we'll do in the next few episodes, they might not all follow one after the other because I might do other things in between. For example, we've got the next Unexplained Mysteries coming up in a couple of weeks. But over the series of these particular episodes, we will actually draw out those distinctions and why Eastern philosophical inquiry is really vitally important to our understanding of reality and why we in the West really ignore the differences or we try to westernize those differences. I think there's a danger in that, and the danger is we lose out on a whole raft of insights and increased knowledge and even, dare I say it, spiritual enlightenment. So come and join me for those episodes. I think I might touch upon some of the key Indian and Eastern philosophical contexts in a little bit more detail in the next episode, and then start the process of looking at each of the individual key questions that the Eastern and Indian philosophies advance. So join me for that. I hope you've enjoyed it. As always, there will be a discussion post for you to join in at the forum, which is darreninform.com/thinkworksforum. You go in there, there will be a post for this particular episode, and come and make your comments on there, any insights that you have about Indian and Eastern philosophy and how it differs from Western, and what your favourite discourses are from Eastern and Indian philosophy, and if you make some suggestions, I may well actually explore them in a future episode as well, giving credit where credit, of course, is due. In the meantime, everyone, keep asking questions, and I will see you all very soon.
Would like to find out more or join in with the conversation, our forum has a corresponding post for you to comment in. Simply go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum and join in the fun. Or you can join the Facebook page by searching for at Darren Inform for news, tips and other helpful strategies. The show was hosted by Darren Smithson and the music is by Alexander Nakarada. You have been listening to Think Works, the podcast for thinkers.